Good afternoon. Welcome to the newly instituted House Commerce and Consumer Protection Policy and Finance Committee. To our Wiley veteran members, welcome back. To our freshman members, beware of the hazing that Representative Davids leads us in. You will note that no rules have arrived in your inboxes. That's because as Representative Davids, former Chair Davids, former Chair Hoppe, and myself as a former chair, we don't have any rules. We just tend to like that old-fashioned rule of try to treat others as you'd like to be treated. Amendment-wise, if you can get your amendments in ahead of time, everybody appreciates that, particularly our staff folks. If you can't and you've got a good idea, well, so what? Bring it along. We'll try to deal with it on the go and do good work. And we also have the advantage of having the eminent Mr. Pender, who has an answer for everything, regardless of how strange or unusual it may be. I think what we'll do, we'll just go rapidly around with quick introductions, and then we're going to get right into the committee. This committee is not known for having overviews, and I don't like overviews. We tend to just do them when we think it's going to be a topic that's worth talking about, and this is clearly one of them that's sort of been hot. And on which we may continue to have further discussions. With that, I'm Joe Atkins. I represent Inver Grove Heights, Egan, Sunfish Lake, and Mendota Heights in Minnesota House. To my right.
I'm Chris Kwapik. I'm the committee administrator for the House Commerce Committee.
I'm Patty Fritz, and I represent parts of Rice, Steele, and Dodge County, and I'm vice chair.
Leon Lilly, I represent North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale.
Dan Schoen, I represent Great Cloud Island Township, Newport, St. Paul Park, South St. Paul, Cottage Grove.
Melissa Hortman, I represent part of Brooklyn Park and part of Coon Rapids.
Lori Halverson, and I represent half of Egan.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike Sundin from 11A. The two largest cities would be Cloquet and Moose Lake.
Linda Slocum, parts of Richfield and parts of Bloomington.
Sheldon Johnson represents Southeast St. Paul.
And on our inside, we've got...
Sorry. Trevor Oliver, DFL Caucus Research.
Sarah Anderson, Plymouth.
Jennifer Loon, good portion of Eden Prairie.
Chris Fazetsky, I represent Lyon County, Redwood County, Lac of Parle, and Yellow Medicine County in southwest Minnesota.
Greg Davids, Philhorn, Houston Counties.
Kelly Woodard, Southern Scott County and Western Missouri County.
Tim Sanders, represent Blaine.
Joe Hoppe, Chaska, Chanhassen, and Victoria.
And Tom Pender from the House Research Department.
Andrew Biggerstaff, House Research.
Pete Voivich, Legislative Assistant.
I'm Emily Adrians. I'm with House Fiscal Staff.
John Reynolds, Researcher for the Republican Caucus.
And welcome to, welcome to all the returning members as well as all of our new members. We've got a page or two. You want to introduce yourself quickly?
I'm a Will Ishii. I'm a page, the primary one, and then Nasser, he's making copies.
And then we have one member sneaking down to my left, who probably needs no introduction. Representative Zellers, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm to your right.
indeed you are.
Way to your right.
Couple quick announcements. Congratulations are in order for Representative Davids, who I believe just had a new grandchild. Congratulations to Greg.
7 pounds, 3 ounces, Samuel Gregory Larson, and his first set of clubs is Titleist.
He's a day old.
And ready to play. Congratulations, Greg. And also our committee administrator just had a brand new baby, 3 days old, Chris?
Yep.
It's 4 feet tall. actually, what? Heidi is?
Heidi Elizabeth, 6 pounds, 13 ounces, 21 inches. Yeah, we're hoping she'll be a volleyball player one day. So.
And thank you. That concludes our meeting. I'm sure that's why the cameras were here, was to see the... actually, first up today, we've got we're going to do an overview of some gaming issues in Minnesota. Minnesota State Lottery, Edvin Petten, Executive Director for the Minnesota State Lottery, is going to give us a quick walkthrough of where things stand at the lottery and what sort of initiatives they have underway right now. Mr. Van Petten, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the committee. Hey, how do I There we go. Coming through. As Chairman indicated, my name is Ed Van Petten. I'm new to the state of Minnesota and to the Minnesota State Lottery. To my right is Don Feeney, Lottery Director of Planning and Research. In the front row over there is our General Counsel, Dana Banwer. Both are not native Minnesotans, but have been here 30-some years apiece, I think, so practically. And this is my first time in a Minnesota legislative hearing, Mr. Chairman. Don has tried to school me well, but if I have a breach of protocol, please feel free to point it out. Brief background for the committee. I was raised in Kansas, went to law school there, was a prosecutor for many years, starting as a county attorney, working my way up to deputy attorney general. Then worked for the Supreme Court in the disciplinary administrator's office, at which time then Governor Graves asked me to go to the lottery. Knew nothing about the lottery, but after spending time in the industry, grew to like it. It's much more fun than chasing death penalty cases, I can promise you that. And so when the new governor replaced me, this position opened up, I applied, and Governor Dayton placed me here. And that's how I ended up in Minnesota. I started March 1, and I have really enjoyed it up here. Your weather has been kind to me so far. And actually, I kind of appreciated a couple of those 100-degree days this summer. It felt more like home that way. So, that being said, on September 1 of 2012, the lottery was running about $32 million behind the year before. As you remember, there was a three-week shutdown, and after that, it took time to get the retail system up and going again and people buying lottery tickets again as they did. At the end of the shutdown period, we were $18 million behind at that time. We ended up the year at $520 million, which was a $16 million record from the year before. So the staff at the Minnesota Lottery made up approximately $48 million in sales in 10 months. I cannot take credit for that. I was only there for 3 months of that, but it shows that I inherited a fantastic staff. We are currently up almost 20% from last year. Obviously, some of that is due to the fact that there was the three-week shutdown, and also we've had a very good Powerball roll. However, we are up about $49.8 million over where we were last year at this time. For FY12, we also had a record transfer to the state of $124 million. If we keep going, we are on track to transfer in excess of $130 million this year. The distribution to beneficiaries, as you know, 40% is mandated by the Constitution to go to environmental causes. At this time, money goes to the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund, the Natural Resources Fund, Game and Fish Fund, and with about 53% going into the general fund and 2% to compulsive gambling fund. As you know, other than the constitutional mandate, the legislature determines all the additional beneficiaries and their funding. And I was told to be brief, so that's really all the overview of present operations, unless someone would have a question at this time.
And I'll just interrupt for a moment,
sure,
Mr. Van Petten. This is the first time, at least in my memory, that this committee has been a finance committee as well as a policy committee, and I look to some of my predecessors. I don't recollect it being we will have a much more thorough review of the financial pieces of these items. Today was primarily to not have their very first voyage in the Commerce Committee be one where we were hammering on their budget issues, but to give Mr. Van Petten an opportunity to introduce himself and some of the new initiatives that the Minnesota State Lottery is working on. With that, Mr. Van Petten.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. The lottery is kind of a hybrid between agency and private business, and we can't just sit on our laurels and hope that the business will remain. We're continually working on new initiatives and trying to stretch out into new marketplaces. Last year, we've changed the way we deliver tickets. Last year, we introduced 75 different scratch games. That's more than double what was introduced 10 years ago. And that's somewhat what the industry trend is. However, Minnesota definitely is among the highest in distribution of instant scratch games. And two of the new initiatives I wanted to point out to you are initiatives we have with what we call Play at the Pump. You can buy Powerball or a Mega Millions ticket at a gas pump and also at our ATM facilities. Presently, these are pilot programs. We have 21 ATM facilities in the metro area that the test is on, and there are 9 gas station locations. The ATMs are all non-bank ATMs due to federal guidelines. It can't be affiliated with a bank. It's privately owned. This is what the ATM screen looks like as you approach it. You will see that it has that lottery is sold here and has the Mega Millions and Powerball logo. Once you select lottery, you're asked for your debit card. As most of you are probably aware, credit cards cannot be used for the purchase of lottery tickets in the state of Minnesota. And also, please notice that on every screen for the purchase of a lottery ticket, we have provided an exit so that the player can opt out at any time they choose to. They don't have to go back a bunch of screens. They just exit. After that, you're asked for your PIN number. Then the first time you purchase, you have to verify ID and age by swiping your driver's license. As you know, the magnetic stripe contains that information. Then you are asked to select the number of tickets. The maximum purchase at any time is $20. The maximum amount any player can wager in a full week is $50. And there's also a provision to self-exclude. There is a $1 convenience fee that's paid to the vendor who provides the software, a company named Link3 out of New York and California, I guess. And then the retailer also gets a commission. And you can, as you see, you can still cancel the purchase. And winnings are automatically tied to your debit card. So $599 and below is automatically transferred into your bank account. $600 and above, you are notified by text message on your cell phone if you do enter your cell phone number. And otherwise, you are given a receipt. And you see the next screen. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. You can enter your cell phone. You get a paper receipt when you make the purchase, and also you will get a text on your cell phone giving you your numbers. The transaction itself is recorded within the Link3 and Lottery ICS system. Basically, the Play at the Pump screens are identical. We now have the age verification software in place on them, and it is functioning. I will tell you, at first, we had doubts about the functionality, so the vendor, Link3, wanting to get the software tested and proved, hired people to stay at the pump and verify identities and verify ages at that time. You may hear about the lottery wasting money to have state employees at the gas stations, and that is absolutely not true. They were paid for by our vendor.
Did they pump your gas, too?
No. You may not be aware, but the National Association of Convenience Stores surveys show that 73% of gas customers do not go in the store. So this is designed to give that player or that purchaser an opportunity to play the lottery products. And we're, as I say, we're still in proof of concept at limited locations, but it's looking good so far. In addition, in your packets, we've provided a 2013 overview, which is much more in detail, as well as a handout regarding gambling in Minnesota. And it covers history and the legal structure of gaming in our great state. And with that, I would invite any of you at any time to contact me or any of my staff. And if you want to tour the facilities, if you just have questions about our operation, please feel free to contact us at any time.
And thank you, Mr.
Any other questions?
There are. They're just lining up. And we are just for planning purposes. I think we're going to spend about the first 25 minutes talking about the lottery. About 4:25, we're going to transition into a discussion about electronic pull tabs and Link Bingo. And then roughly 5 o'clock, we'll be talking about an overview of the Minnesota Racing Commission. We've got Representative Anderson, Lilly, Zellers, and Davids. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Van Petten, did I see that correctly, that there's a dollar charged every time that you use the pay-at-the-pump version
For every
transaction?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we get used to it. Mr. Van Patten.
Yes, that is per transaction. The minimum transaction for Mega Millions is $5. The minimum transaction for Powerball is $10.
Okay.
And, of course, you can go up to $20 on either.
Okay.
Or Powerball is $6.
Representative,
$6, $10, and $20.
You keep pausing, Mr. Van Patten, and I call Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Van Patten. So when retailers sell those tickets, are they charged a dollar for each transaction then too, or how does that work?
Mr. Van Patten.
Chairman, the retailers receive a 3% commission from the lottery for that transaction. The retailers are charged nothing. The retailers do not pay the debit card charge. The Link 3 pays that fee.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Van Patten. It was actually not Representative Lilly, but Representative Loon, who had a question as well. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Van Patten. I was looking at your first slide at your revenues and that, and noticed that during the economic recession we've been through from 2008 to 12, it didn't appear like your revenues went down, which is something we don't see in most categories here. What we've seen in the legislature. So I was just curious about that, if I was reading that correctly, and is that typical of most lotteries in other states as well, from what you know?
Mr. Chairman, could I defer to Mr. Feeney?
Sure.
He has
Mr. Feeney.
Much more institutional knowledge than I do.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loon, Don Feeney, Research and Planning Director, Minnesota State Lottery. It was an interesting situation. Actually, what happened at the height of the recession, most lotteries around the country saw their sales decline. We were the exception. We've had sales increases now for 5 straight years, and I think there may be only 3 other lotteries around the country that have had that. So we're unusual in that regard. My own theory as to what is going on, and I've got some data to back this up, is overall gambling revenues in the state are down. Pull tabs by themselves are down much more than the lottery is up. We know that racing declined. We know anecdotally that the revenues at the Minnesota casinos have declined. I think what happened is we saw a fair number of people who, instead of going for their evening out at the bar to play, have some drinks and play pull tabs or go to the casino, whatever, said, I'll just pick up a few scratch tickets instead and save themselves a fair amount of money. And actually, I see one of our bigger challenges being, all right, now that those people have done that, as the economy gets better, how do we keep them buying a few lottery tickets, whether or not they return to their other forms of entertainment?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And then a couple of other quick questions, hopefully. One, the ATM, I've not seen those. Are they everywhere, and they're separate ATMs just for the lottery?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Van Patten.
Representative Loon, we are in the proof of concept phase, as I stated, and very limited pilot program. There are only 21 in the entire metro at this time, so they're not real visible. In fact, about half of them are located in sports bars, and we would be happy to provide you a list of locations if you wish.
No, but
thank you, Representative Loon. Anything else?
Thank you. Just one other question about you mentioned your development of new scratch games and that. And what do you know about the characteristics of people who play the lottery in Minnesota? And I mean, is it are you continually getting new people in that play the games? Is it just a pretty steady stream of people who continually play, and it's part of their daily or weekly routine?
Mr. Van Patten and Mr. Chairman. The only single characteristic about lottery scratch ticket players is that there is no single characteristic. Some players like the extended play games, so like crossword, bingo, a game called Slingo, which is kind of a cross between the two. And we have recently introduced a $20 crossword game, which is an 8x8 square. We just want to keep their interest and allow for fair play and good payouts. And also there's the player who would, if in a casino, would probably play a slot machine, just wants to buy the ticket and see if he's won something, he or she. So we have to
consider all those factors and keep the games entertaining based upon what that player or what part of the players want. So we have to be across all spectrums.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bloom, if I could just add to that a little bit. We've surveyed the citizens and our customers quite a bit on a regular basis. And actually, if you look through the publications we provided, you'll see some demographic data on lottery players in there. What we know is that lottery players tend to be middle-aged, middle to upper income. Actually, the highest income category for lottery play is right around the $100,000 a year household income. Low-income people play the least. You see something of a drop-off in the upper incomes because they're betting on pork belly futures. The people over 75 are less likely to play, and interestingly, people under the age of 25 are less likely to play, 18 to 24-year-olds. other than that, again, it's we about 55% of the adults in the state will play a lottery game in any given year, so it's pretty much everywhere, everyone in Minnesota.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Van Petten. Welcome, Minnesota. Don't count on those winters being nice for very long. But
I've heard.
I'd like to go back to the ATM as well. The electronic benefit transfer cards that we have here can be used at ATMs. Will those be accepted at either the pump or at the ATM?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, no. It is strictly bank debit cards.
So you've
there has to be a bank account associated with the transaction.
Representative Zellers?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So you've been able to electronically then prohibit those cards from being used at the ATMs as well as at the pump.
Mr. Van Petten?
Mr. Chairman, yes. In fact, the software vendor provided a privately owned ATM for testing, and there were many challenges, but yes, before we launched anything in a public setting, we verified that that worked. And just so you know, if the question is coming up, we had, under our supervision, had people under 18 turn on the machine and swipe their ID so we could verify that that was going to work also and prevent minors from being exposed to this.
Representative Zellers?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's very good news and very interesting news.
Yeah. Thank you. And Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Van Petten, will there be a list of gas stations where you can do the pay it or the play at the pump thing?
Mr. Van Petten?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have a list of where they are now. There's only 9 locations in the metro. Eventually, we will go statewide, and my anticipation is that we would have those locations on our website because we have locate a retailer function on our website now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Van Petten, I'd like that list because I will not go to those gas stations. Let's say I'm really in a hurry and I got to get to my Amway meeting, and all of a sudden the cars are 5 cars deep, and I've got some fine Minnesotan ahead of me playing the lottery. Really,
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Van Petten,
Representative, we anticipate, and from what we've tested, it's about a 10 to 15 second transaction. So I don't think it will cause delay, and at this time, the average transaction per pump in the locations it's located is a little over 1 per day.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Van Petten, I'm going to be introducing legislation to ban lottery tickets at the pump in District 28B. I think that is the most ridiculous idea I've ever heard in my entire life. And I've heard a lot of them around here because I've been around here a long time. But this is tops.
Sure.
I mean, when I have gas and I got to go to my Amway meeting, I want to go.
Mr. Van Petten, welcome. This is your introduction to Representative David.
quite all right.
And perhaps that'll be our last discussion of gas this semester. I'm not sure. But we also had Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Van Petten, I was going to piggyback on Representative David's, and I have a few lined up here, but Are they required to get gas when they purchase at the pump, or when they go play at the pump, do they have to make a gas transaction as well? Or they can just do exactly what he's not very happy about, just pull up and play only?
Generally, I ride my bike there, and I pull up and... No, I'm Mr. Van Petten, is that a...
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, there's no requirement for gas purchase.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chair?
Representative Schill.
How, on the age verification, I would imagine that you're going to be looked at suspectly. How do you make certain that underage individuals aren't purchasing at the pump? And then also, is this the first type of non-monitored vending for the lottery?
Mr. Van Petten.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, we've had vending machines in the field for years, and we have lotto vending machines the last couple of years before my arrival that also have age verification software on them, and we're not aware of any minors purchasing with them. We do know the age verification works with the driver's license. People have argued that a 16-year-old can take their parents' driver's license, but it has to be tied to a valid bank account with verification of age. So I would be shocked if it could happen. I'm not technical enough to tell you there's absolutely no way to fool the system, as with any system.
Okay. Representative Schoen, anything further?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Van Petten, is the percentage paid to the retailer the same inside and at the pump?
Mr. Van Petten.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no. Inside is 5.5%. When the clerk has to actually handle the transaction at the pump, they get 3%.
Okay. Representative Schoen, anything further?
Thank you.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. We appreciate the overview, the running through of the new initiatives. We also appreciate the fact that your revenues were up in spite of just about every other revenue coming in going down. So thank you for your time this afternoon, and members, thank you for your questions.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, just as a for our body, do we have power over their implementation, or is it just kind of like the Wild West? They can just do whatever they want to put them in the city parks, or if they decide 3 years from now that that's the way to go, or do we have any legislative boundaries, or is
it we are legislators, Representative Lilly. We have unlimited power over now. They have the lottery, and we'll get when we come back to the lottery again in further detail, which we will. We'll go through their mission in greater detail, but they have certain statutes that they're bound by, all of which, though, and certainly the Minnesota Constitution places certain limits on gaming in Minnesota, but the legislature has the ability to alter that. Other than the Constitution, we have the ability to alter any statutes that apply to the Minnesota State Lottery.
Thank you.
We've got next up is an overview of electronic pull tabs and link bingo. If Mr. Barrett would come down. Mr. Barrett, welcome back. This is for members. I think we've got it's a pretty senior bunch. We've got a handful of newer members, everybody that's been paying attention the last couple of years knows that we used electronic pull tab revenue as the main funding stream for the Viking Stadium that was approved last session. We've had a variety of reports that have come in over the last few months in terms of how those electronic pull tabs have performed, the status of approvals, link bingo, and other things. And it's my understanding that members may have, and others outside of the Capitol may have, ideas about ways to alter those issues or matters. And I thought it might make sense to early on have an opportunity to hear from Mr. Barrett as well as others in the electronic gaming industry to ascertain where things are currently. So, Mr. Barrett, with that, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
Happy to be here, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board. And similar, I thought it would be best to do a very brief overview, knowing that we have an opportunity to come back before the committee as far as the budget. But I think in fairness to some of the new members as well as some of the old, just an overview of what it is the Gambling Control Board does. And there's a brief one-page summary. But we do regulate the charitable gaming industry for the most part, the biggest in the country. There's five forms of charitable gambling: pull tabs, which is certainly a focus today, something called tip boards, it's a small version of the pull tab, bingo. Everybody loves bingo, raffles, and then something called paddle wheels, and that's not a riverboat form of gambling. It's like the Wheel of Fortune, but it's important to note. But those are the five forms. A lot of people call the Gambling Control Board asking questions about the lottery or this or that. And while our title is Gambling Control Board, our primary focus is charitable gaming, but we certainly work well in concert with our folks at the lottery, the Racing Commission, tribal interests. We're all kind of in this business. But last fiscal year, we had the industry reported just over $1 billion in gross receipts. That does not include tax-exempt raffles that happen at the church bazaars and those kinds of activities. That's a $33 million activity. Net receipts, approximately $193 million, came in after the prizes were paid out. That equates to roughly an 81, almost an 82% prize payout to the players. As I mentioned, Minnesota ranks number one. A lot of people don't realize that all those pull tab booths and locations around the state certainly add up. We license charitable organizations that are duly registered with the Secretary of State. We have right now approximately 1,200 of those charitable organizations conducting gambling at nearly 2,800 locations in Minnesota. As you can see, the distribution of charitable organizations under license, 28% are veterans, American Legion, VFWs. We have 15% fire relief, and yet we see that's where a significant big ticket purchases go for fire trucks, fire safety equipment. There's the youth hockey activities, roughly 10%. 2% outdoors, that's kind of the fish and game folks. And then 42% everything from church, civic festivals, and the like make up the balance. Taxes are part of the industry, but just to give a flavor to this committee, last year, based on the gross receipts, charitable gaming generated approximately $41.4 million in taxes, as it equates to a percent of gross or percent of net. You see that there. It's a little less than 4% of the gross receipts, or 21.5% of the net receipts after the prize has been paid. Charitable contributions, which is really the focus of what charitable gaming is all about, approximately $43.5 million last year, was dedicated to charitable purposes, and that equates to a 4.1% of gross or a 22.6% of net. Included in your packets, hopefully, is our copy of our annual report, much more detail in that respect for how the industry has been operating and some of the expense categories. I can certainly answer questions later in that respect, but it's I would like to think this is good reading material, but it does give a picture of what the industry has been doing. And again, Mr. Chair, opportunity to come back because I know the time is brief today. But I think the focus today is what's been going on with the electronic gaming since the bill was signed by, or passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And what I attempted to do for the benefit of the committee is literally go through a timeline from the date the bill was signed and highlight a couple of the significant points that I think are of significance and of importance. And then get into some of the current status as well as maybe some helpful insight from the regulator's perspective on some of the issues. But briefly, the governor signed the allowance for these electronic devices on May 14th. 3 days later, we had our very first application from a vendor that was offering the electronic pull tabs. And it's significant in the sense that nowhere did we expect to see an application that soon come in. But 3 days later, it did, and we started the process at that point. While that vendor was going through the process for backgrounds, we did get our second application, but I duly note it's roughly 1.5 months later. And it comes into play as far as when we heard some responses about how one vendor is already out there providing product and others are not. But I want to point out some of the time frames from when we got the application and how things move. Technical standards. In less than 2 months' time, the board was able to consider and approve the technical standards. In that 2 months' time, we met with representatives of the gaming industry, the testing labs, the charities, to come up with standards, keeping in mind that there really is no other model out there in the country that was being proposed. What was going to take place in Minnesota was allowed anywhere else. But that be it as it may, very supportive board, very supportive industry, in terms of bringing that data, that information, and the technology together. I point out, last year when the hearings were going on, some of you may remember, and this is no slight against this particular vendor, but this was the sample device that was kind of on display at some of the hearings. It's not powered up, but my point here is this is one of the devices that's out there. And the point I'm making is technology changes rapidly. And so that's part of our issue with the board as well when we approve these games. I can pass this, we're only free to play, but there's other products out there. This is just all I had room to carry, but my visual here is the technology that changes and how do we as a board with the standards work with the industry, how do we keep pace with those standards and how do we apply?
Ms. Barrett, would you hand one of those to one of our pages to pass around?
Just briefly if it goes wrong.
How much cash do you have deposited in there? Perhaps it should come to the chair first, and then I'll pass it around.
There's over 1,600 on this sample, but I will point out we're not going to pay out today.
Then never mind. It can go around the edge here.
But in fairness, this is a sample that's provided by one of the vendors. It is not your atypical game. What we asked the vendor to do was show us sample games. And I, for visual, real quick, you can hit the menu here. It'll take you back to the main screen. And you could literally scroll back and forth and pick your game. What I'll leave out here is maybe a more common game that mimics what we understand as far as the paper. But you'll see there's different denominations. This happens to be a $1. So you're over in here, this corner, you're going to buy a tab for a dollar, and then you simply touch the screens to reveal the win. And what if we won?
Of course you did.
Again.
That's the one winner. Nobody else is going to. All
right. And I appreciate, but in fairness, the vendor, what we had asked them to was demonstrate a game with more frequent winners so we could see the animation. And this I'll take the opportunity because I know there's been a lot of concern over what the these games should look like. The law provides that these games cannot mimic a slot machine. And what does that mean? And that's part of the responsibility on the board to go. It's got to have the appearance of a single tab window with the features that we know on a pull tab. But at the same time, there is games, paper games, that afford a bonus. I'm playing here as we speak. There's bonus opportunities. And if we approved every game that came before the board, we would be here in trouble because they're very creative in what they're trying to do. We get that. But the board's focus is to maintain what the intent of the law was, to put in the electronic format what they're used to in paper. So with that, good luck. But it does have more share of winners. But again, that's just to say that, see the animation.
Ms. Baird, we've got about 5 minutes. We've just got several other members who've got a.
Yep, no, I'll abbreviate. But again, in the handout, I want to point out the impact of the dates. And from the time the bill was signed to our action at the board, working with the industry, and approving these applications. Because I know I've gotten some calls from legislators, hey, what's the latest on this application or where is it? When a vendor applies for license, they go through a series of background checks, verification, and it's not just the same for everybody. Depending upon the complexity of the company, the information they provide, those are some of the different things that go in. But bringing us up to where we are current date, you'll see that we currently have two licensed manufacturers already providing electronic games to our licensed distributors. We have one existing manufacturer that's already been licensed that's developing electronic games. And so the point there is we will have three vendors very shortly providing electronic games to the distributors. We have three manufacturers that are pending applications before the board. They're going through the background check, etc. Six licensed distributors have been approved. When this new format came on, a requirement in the law was to have these distributors, we know they're already licensed by the board, but they have to describe how they intend to handle the electronic games, the inventory, and the accounting. So that was an added process, but we have six of those approved. Something I'll talk about briefly, but Link Bingo, focusing on today, is what's going on with the electronic pull tabs, but included in the legislation was the allowance for electronic Link Bingo, and that's coming down the pike.
What's your best guess, Mr. Barrett, as to when that would be approved? A range even might be.
Well, frankly, Mr. Chair, we had hoped this month. We had our board meeting on Tuesday. Everything we were lining up for in that respect was for Tuesday. We have one vendor already approved to be a Link Bingo vendor. There will be another one recommended for approval on Tuesday. The unfortunate thing is neither one of those vendors have got their product and their game system through the testing, the independent testing lab, which is a requirement. We're hopeful, but it's not going to happen Tuesday. To the extent that the board will consider a meeting in between our next meeting, But we're hopeful this month, but it doesn't appear to be the case. Anyway, as of today, we have 120 sites that are currently equipped with electronic pull tab devices. 108 of those are actively selling. In other words, the vendors have put the product in place at 12 sites. They're going through the training, but they haven't launched the actual sales. And again, since September 18th, just over $4 million has been raised in gross receipts. What I do, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, is briefly go through from a regulator's perspective of some of the issues that have come up from the time, because I know, again, others have been called, but we are very early in this whole cycle, this new game format. I mean, less than 4 months from the time the bill was signed to literally put the first game in play was phenomenal. Our folks over in the state of Virginia passed a law about 3 years ago. We're further ahead than where they were in terms of activity right now. Issue I mentioned, that one of the vendors was literally 3 days after the board approved the license. They were the first out of the chute. The board's concern was, should we let that vendor go or do we wait for the others to catch up? And obviously the position of the board was, they're ready to go, we're not going to wait, and so the license was approved. But given that, some of the concern, I think I'll call it distributor loyalty and all the right reasons. I mean, how many people have changed insurance agents last year? You kind of get comfortable with your distributor, and that's what we saw as far as some of the rollout, where a new vendor coming in, but existing charities and existing bar locations, we're kind of taking a wait-and-see approach, and I can't stress that enough. Obviously, charities and bars wanted to see more product. We didn't have it in the early stages. We have more coming out now, and I think that's an important point. I talked about the technology changes and how we're trying to keep pace with that. Background checks. Again, the complexity of the company, but everybody that comes into Minnesota will be background for appropriate, you know, what they're doing in other jurisdictions, what are their finances. But again, the more complex a company, that could take longer. We don't, they're not treated all the same. But I will give a shout out to our counterparts in public safety that are doing the background checks. Very thorough job, very efficient in terms of what they look at. Marketing. This is an issue that was raised when the media picked up on the lagging sales, and what about the marketing? Charitable gaming or the Gambling Control Board is not the lottery, you know, that has an opportunity to spend over, I think, what was it, $6 million in advertising. On average, these licensed charities spend less than $500 a year marketing and advertising their games. But that's a focus. But that was a point that the bar industry reps, and you'll probably hear from them, got together with reps from the charities to see what they could do to help get the message out or market their product. Upfront costs. The requirement in law that the bars pay the communication, the internet service, and there was a concern because it's upwards of $800 to $1,000 startup. That was a concern for some of the bar owners, rightfully so, the hardship. But I think in terms of the paybacks and, again, some of the testimonies we've heard from other bar owners, they're trying to work through that issue as well. Location, location, location. I can't stress enough. I'll give a shout out to Porky's in the east side of St. Paul. Very small bar, but doing phenomenal sales. Roosevelt Bar up in Eveleth. Phenomenal sales. They just got into it in December. Those are the kind of models that the charities and other industry folks are looking at. Why does it work there and maybe minimal sales in other places? But that's some of the things we're looking at to see what works and why does it work better in one versus the other. Bar Bingo, very popular. But that you're going to hear more when we get into the link bingo a little later. But I kind of want to end my time with the emphasis that as regulators and trying to stay neutral on the marketing side, these electronic games have given us a leg up in terms of oversight that we didn't have before. We know where these games are in play. We know if somebody was trying to play after hours when the bar should be shut down. The reporting, daily activity, we can see that in terms of the activity that we don't have with paper. But paper is not going away. And I will give a shout because I know a lot of the folks in the charitable side, geez, Tom, all you do is talk about electronics. Well, that's the flavor of the month, the moment. Last month, the board approved over 400 new paper games. It's very active. Some of the expectation, we thought we were going to see a decrease in paper sales at those sites, and that hasn't been the case. Again, early in the game, we're certainly not seeing a decrease in paper. In fact, and this is where our folks at the lottery, pull tab sales have increased this past fiscal year, and they're on track this current fiscal year to be over 8%. You got to win 8%. So sales in paper, maybe it's just the media talking, I don't know, but certainly the economy and those things, but sales have increased. That's a good thing. I stand for questions. Hopefully,
Mr. Baird, you teed it up. We do have some questions, but I think we're going to get through the testimony, and then we're going to have folks come back with who's ever best to most appropriate to answer questions. Okay. With that, I want to, and thank you very much, want to turn to Mr. Mossman from the Department of Revenue to give us the latest revenue information. And I see, while he's coming down, that the machine has stopped with Representative Hoppe, who seems to be winning.
Mr. Barrett, you owe me $93.
Play it long enough, you'll lose.
What's 93 plus 75?
Still
there? Yeah, cash out. Where's cash out?
And Mr. Mossman, welcome to the committee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Matt Mossman, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Revenue. Just here today to give you a recap of the current status of where the revenue estimates are at for the charitable gambling revenues relative to the conversation about the Viking Stadium. As you know, first of all, the way that the law is structured is essentially that any increase over a baseline that was set, any increase in charitable gambling revenues is available for stadium financing. So it's actually more than electronic pull tabs. It could be any change in paper pull tabs or any of the other charitable gambling of the five options that Mr. Barrett referred to as well. And so the baseline for revenues that was set as of the February 2012 forecast was a $36.9 million baseline. And at that time, then at the end of the 2012 legislative session, the expectation was that revenues, or the estimate at that point, was that revenues would increase by $35.2 million in fiscal year 13 and $57.9 million in each of fiscal 14 and fiscal 15. In the November forecast, there was an adjustment made to reflect some changes in the timing of the ramp-up of the activity relative to the number of sites that were going to be online and when. And so the adjustment was the November forecast reported a revenue change relative to the baseline of $17.2 million, so $18 million less than was expected at the end of the 2012 session, and about $4.5 million less each year after that, such that by the end of the current forecast window, fiscal 17, revenues are anticipated to be about $37.5 million lower than they were estimated to be at the end of the 2012 session. Now, a couple things just to say in terms of putting that in context. The structure of the bill was to provide for a reserve, understanding that most of the most significant expense, of course, being bonding debt service, would not begin immediately. So at this point, based on the forecast, there's still anticipated to be a $47.4 million reserve at the end of by the end of 2017, a general reserve for under the stadium law. That's the high level overview. You know, obviously it's a new technology, and so really the most significant driver in the estimate is the take up rate, and you know, among charities and organizations and locations. And so that's the number we'll continue to follow and see where we're at in February.
And Mr. Mossman, on that, I think Mr. Barrett said 120 sites now are equipped with electronic pull tabs. What was the assumption going in versus what is the assumption now as far as the take-up rate?
Sure. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The assumption at the time of the end of session was 2,500 sites in the fall, so as of October, and now the assumption is now 2,500 sites by July 1st of 2013.
And any sense of whether or not we're on that? I know that was revised several weeks ago. Any sense of if we're on to that pace? And this might be, again, better for Mr. Barrett, but
yeah.
Even 2,500 seems very aggressive by July 1st. Am I
and that's a good,
something?
It's a good question, Mr. Chair. I don't know that you're missing anything. You know, where we're at, essentially, is, like I said, the take-up rate, obviously, is key. We'll have to take a look at it. I think if you were to look at where we were at 2 months ago and 3 months ago and relative to each time a new distributor or new manufacturer, new distributor is approved and the relationships that they have with existing locations is significant. So the number can jump up, and it has been going up certainly every week. So we're really just at this point, you know, we're obviously there is a difference between those two numbers, and we're in a position of kind of waiting to see until where we're at the time of the February forecast and what that take-up rate then looks like going forward.
And this is a perfect time to talk with Mr. Lund from Allied Charities, because he may be able to answer that that issue. I just wanted, Mr. Lund, if you'll come down. By my math, we've got 120 sites currently operating. We need to multiply that by 20. So for every one that is currently doing business, we need another 19 venues to adopt electronic pull tabs by July 1st, just to meet the anticipated figure by that we're now using for our revenue estimate. And Mr. Lund, perhaps you can, wherever you want to start, by the way, this is, I'll let you introduce yourself as the new executive director for Allied Charities. We welcome you. But if you could also address that that take-up rate, that appears to be key to our discussion. Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the chairman has said, my name is Alan Lund. Brief bio, I was with the Procter & Gamble Distributing Company for 21 years and left the state three times and came back three times. I'm the proverbial bad penny. 3 years ago, I became the gambling manager for the St. Michael American Legion. And then 2 years ago, I got on the Allied Charities Board to try and learn more about our business and how things run and how we can increase the charitable contributions in our communities. And greetings from the 600-plus charities that ACM represents throughout our state here. Charities asked for electronics as a tool to help enhance our ability to deliver to our bottom line, to our mission work, and we're very thankful that we got that. We worked for that for 3 years, and we're thankful for the tax relief we did get. The tax relief did have mixed results. Half the charities are now paying more than they did last year. Half are paying less. The Legion I belong to, we're paying less, and we're very thankful for that. The charities are in three what I call three buckets. There's the group that are the early adopters that when something new like the electronics, they said, we're going for that, we're getting on it, we're going to be first to market, and we're very thankful that they were there. Then there was a second pod that said, I'd like something to compare and contrast to. If I don't have at least two to look at, I don't know whether either of these are a good deal or not. And we're now getting more vendors. We now have the two, and more are going to come very quickly. And then the third group, which Tom spoke to, the group that's had a 25-year relationship with their paper distributor, and that's a very valued relationship to each of them. And that distributor, the majority of them are going to be in the electronics business, and they said, if you can wait for us, that would be good. And the loyalty that they each have with each other, a number of those, that's been their issue. But we now have the choice. The rollout is taking longer than we had all wished. Allied Charities has told any charity that has asked that you need to look at this and what it does for your charity and only your charity, and then you should probably get into electronics, because the only way you're really going to know is if you participate. And we, on our website, we list the vendors that are in business, the vendors that are in the queue. We have a spreadsheet that helps charities to model where the volume from electronics will help in their overall volume and the taxes that they pay. But these are very complicated issues. We're very glad that the paper sales are not being impacted by the electronics at this point, and that's very positive. Because as Tom had talked about, the paper is the one that brings it home for us, for both the charities and the state. Again, what I would say is we need your help and to continue to get better at delivering more to our charities. We will probably always come to you and ask for some kind of tax relief. It's what we do. We have an example. I had lunch yesterday with 12 different charities, and one of them is in electronics, does about $300,000 a month in volume, which translates into about $45,000 in bankable income. And at the end of the day, when they pay all their bills, they have $3,000 to give away. They're voting next week whether they're going to continue with gaming or not, because the reward no longer outweighs the work. And I don't think any of us want that to happen. I know none of us do. So we need to get better as charities at being better business people, because we're not for-profit industries. We're for-people industries. But we get the greater good. We get that we want to contribute and be part of the communities. It's what we do. It's who we are. So we would tell you, we are pro electronics. We're pro stadium. I tell our charities, you can now point to that thing and say, we help build that. Where in the past, when it all goes to the general fund, you can't do that. And we would ask for your patience. The rollout, when the electronic bingo is available, when all the distributors that want to distribute electronics have products to sell, those numbers are going to go up exponentially very quickly. So, and again, I can't tell you that what it's going to be on July 1. I already lost a luncheon bet with Tom on where we're going to be at the end of January. So, but those numbers will change markedly when everybody that wants to be in the business is in the business. So if we could get some patience, that we would really sincerely appreciate.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. And I know we had some questions. If you can stay there as well. Actually, if Mr. Mossman and Mr. Barrett can come back, we may as well have you all sitting at the same spot for questions. One, and perhaps better for Mr. Barrett, is anybody able to make or Mr. Mossman? We've got 120 active sites for electronic gaming generating $4.2 million gross in electronic pull tabs, and a revenue estimate that is now based on 2,500 sites by July 1. Is that in the realm of possibility? And now, Mr. Baird, you made the mistake of sitting down first, so you get to try to answer that. Is that, I just want to know if that's still, that estimate figure, and Mr. Lund, we can get you another chair. If one of our pages would be nice enough to get poor Mr. Lund here a chair, that would be nice. Or the former Speaker of the House. Now, that's a good guy. Thanks, Kurt.
What else to do with Mr.
We could use a third page, Representative. Thank you.
Underqualified.
Is it possible that we're going to hit 2,500, or is that number going to need to be revised yet, too? Or is it just relax, Mr. Chairman, and the numbers will be okay? Mr. Barrett?
Mr. Chair and member, again, there's a couple of answers, I don't want to soft shoe around this, but I'll get there. But I think there's an element of have some faith, as we heard, and there's also some testimonials that are included in the packets. Those kinds of things help from people that have them in play. But we've already talked to revenue. We see where the numbers go. We've talked to the distributors, like we talked about Link Bingo. The board would love to see Link Bingo game approved this month so we can get rolling. That's not going to happen, though, from what we see. And that's not to say we can't meet between our next meeting. But in terms of the revenue forecast, we've already requested a meeting with revenue to sit down and reevaluate where we think they'll be. I can say I don't believe we're going to be at the 2,500. I don't have a number because we're still working with some of the industry. But I think in terms of our projections as relates to Link Bingo, that's where we're starting to hear the excitement, more so than we think there'll be more sites. Now, we only projected 1,500 sites for Link Bingo, but that goes beyond that. So there's some factors that we need to sit down and see how does this play out with input from the industry, input from the vendors. But to say 2,500, I don't want us to make the same over assumption that we've had and got us here. So it's going to be much more conservative, but a little more.
I was just thinking you used the same sort of description. This is like the Christian Ponder of gambling revenue. It's very high expectations, high hopes going in. maybe a wonderful future, but a little people are a little leery about where things are right now, or a little nervous about it. We do have some questions. Representative Dean, then Zellers, then Switzinski. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this would be for you, Mr. Barnett. Relative to, you had mentioned that it can't mimic or simulate electronic slot machines. Is the software then not a smart software? Because my understanding of electronic slot machines is they actually learn the player and they will give them payouts to entice them to keep playing. So is the pull tap not a smart software in that sense, or does it have some enticement mechanisms as well?
Ms. Barrett?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, good, quite a little above mine, but I will take a stab to say it's not as smart as machine as I think you're equating. And the key point is, different than a slot machine that's based on a random number generator and the odds of the prize payout where it's an infinite number, this particular electronic pull tab game is set with a finite set of tickets, just like we associate with the paper, but there is a random generation in terms of what tickets coming out of the electronic device. So it's smart, but it's not a player versus machine. It's player versus other players that are buying tickets.
Thank you. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barrett, another opportunity for you, and I was wondering where they've come from or gone to, is the sports-themed tip boards. The New Jersey case, I think, was one of the reasons that they were not approved, and wondering how things are going in Jersey besides the governor threatening everybody in Congress.
I'm just amazed, Representative Zellers, that an entire hour has passed before this committee asked the question about sports-themed tip boards. I was wondering that too. Mr. Barrett.
Boy, thank you, Mr. Back. Chair and Representative Zellers, for this opportunity. Because, again, the legislature and the governor put us in a little awkward position. And for those members that might not know what we're talking about, there's a small provision in the bill to allow sports-themed tip boards. Tip boards are a form of legal gaming. It's when it's tied to a sporting event, it runs afoul of a federal law. And so when the legislature passed it, we're in the dilemma to say, how can we implement at a state level, knowing there's a federal law that prohibits states? A real quick background, and you know this, I know, but for benefit of others. 1992, the federal law was passed, the Amateur Sports Protection Act, which basically said states cannot engage in the conduct of wagering based on a sporting event. Their main focus was on sports book, the nasty thing dealing with that, but it didn't differentiate between sports book and wagering on the outcome. Four states at that time were conducting sports wagering. Nevada, obviously, Delaware, Oregon, and I believe Montana. The other three states you don't hear much about, but obviously Nevada. New Jersey, one of the bigger gaming in the states, wasn't in then that loop. So they also passed legislation to allow sports wagering. They're looking at the sports book. And right up as soon as they passed the bill and let go their intent to start selling, offering that format, that's when the major sports franchises, the NFL, Major League Baseball, NCAA, NHL, all stepped in to say stop. So they filed a lawsuit against New Jersey. Knowing this was going on, we came back, the board, with the support of the board and understanding of the industry, said, in light of this legislation and with the support of the governor too, we know it's on the books. We know there's a federal law that prohibits it. The board's position is we will not consider any games at this time in Minnesota until the federal law is successfully challenged by New Jersey using their own money, or it's changed. And so that's where we're in the pattern. Now, the quick update, New Jersey, they've actually gone through. The judge ruled that there is standing cause for the lawsuit to continue, which is what we had expected. But all the states are watching this play out a bit in terms of what's happening in New Jersey. So it's important because we certainly know, anybody have numbers on the last Viking game? That'd be the correct answer, would be no. But we know what happens, and it's out there. Is it a form of gambling? Yes. Could we regulate it? Yes, and we've testified to that. Our focus is on the federal law to prohibit. So, and this is with the support of the Minnesota Attorney General opinion as well.
Thank you. Representative Switzinski?
Mr. Chairman, I had one
question. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Zellers.
That's all right. I have one question for Mr. Lund. You said there are 600 charities, and based on the chair's math as well, how many sites do each of those charities have? I'm just trying to figure out how we get to that 2,500 number. So how many sites do these 600 charities have across the state of Minnesota?
Perhaps Mr. Lund would be best to answer that for
or
us.
Barrett,
Mr. Lund?
Or whoever else is up there.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Representative Zellers, ACM represents 600 charities. There's 1,225 in the state as a whole. And then they have the sites.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, approximately 21. So there's total 1,200 licensed. Half of those are members of Allied Charities. And that's the 600 that is referred to. But we're tracking activity of over 1,200 organizations at approximately 2,800 sites.
Representative Zellers, anything else?
So 2,800 sites, and we're going to have 2,500 of the 28. I'm just going to write the math down, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
You're not just good with moving chairs around, Representative Zellers. You're good with your math, too. Representative Swidzinski.
Mr. Chair, this question can go to any one of you, I guess. Kind of looking at, we've talked about the goals. You know, your goals are pretty well set. Where we're at, 112 units out there, and looking to get to 2,500 or someplace in between. Beyond goals, what is the plan? Do you have a kind of a concrete layout of what your strategy is to get to that point? Beyond just kind of setting a goal and having conversations with people, you know, what is that concrete plan, and then kind of, you know, what your process is to get there, I guess.
Who wants to buzz in first on this one? Mr. Barrett?
I'd be happy to. And Mr. Chair, Representative, again, after the bill was signed and ahead of any games, the board went out. We pretty much partnered up with representatives from the bar industry, Minnesota Licensed Beverage, which I think was going to testify as well, and representatives from Allied Charities to educate the industry. Hey, this is what law was passed. Here's how it could affect. We don't have the games yet, but try to educate. That's where our plan began. At the same time, we were working with all vendors, regardless of formal license approval. We heard that, geez, we want to see more sample games. So we allowed vendors that we've been dealing with to demonstrate their products, as recently at Allied Charities Trade Show Convention up in Duluth. But the point was to allow latitude, even though their equipment has not been approved by the board, to put it in front of the charities, to show them the product. And again, they're still designing their games. But that was part of the plan, to help educate the industry. You want to wait till they're licensed, understand. And I think that's been beneficial. I know there's some vendors in the audience that the board could have taken the hardline approach. You're not licensed, you don't show nothing. But we did help with the education, working with Allied Charities, working with the bar reps, because the bar owners have a lot. We've heard from them. They want it. They want to be able to compete Joe's Bar against Al's Bar. And yet there's been some, I don't want to say pushback, but wait-and-see approach by the charities. They want to understand what's the best game. We don't license the bars. We license the charities who go into a lease agreement with the bar owners. But a lot of people think, well, just give it to the bar owners. That's not the focus. So it's with the charities. So we've done steps to educate where we are today. We have a number of vendors that are out there providing the product. Their rollout, I think they've realized it isn't just putting the equipment down and moving on to the next site. There's the training of the salespersons. There's the whole accounting aspect. It's been simplified in terms of less paperwork as relates to paper games and some more efficiencies in that sense. And I think they start to see the light bulbs. The piece that's included in your packet, that's a good example of the testimonials. There's a couple of folks, gambling managers, I'll be up front, that were skeptical of the electronics. But they did jump into the game, and they see the positive play, the reporting, some cost efficiencies. Those are the things that are going to help get the word out, and that's where we do rely on Allied Charities as well as the bars to kind of do a little bit of coordination to help get that message out as well.
Folks, I think we're going to do one more question, then we're going to take our next item. Representative Hortman.
I can defer, so we can move on.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you, members, for, I'm sure there's more questions that people have, but we'll get more opportunities. So one request, perhaps, Mr. Barrett, of you. If you would be so kind as to continue to update members of this committee, maybe on a monthly basis, something like that, in terms of where things stand relative to this issue, we'd very much appreciate it.
Happy to. There is an update on our website, so you can go on our website and see what sites have the electronics thus far. But I'll certainly follow up the committee and give monthly updates.
Thank you.
I expect to be back, too.
You will. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Last up, not least, is Minnesota Racing Commission overview. Chairman Overton, thank you for joining us. Did you bring a dolly with you, Chairman Overton, for all your files and so on? But
no, Chairman, but I hope I have enough to go around.
welcome to the committee. We appreciate you coming this afternoon. You can proceed whenever you're ready. Just a heads up, and we've kind of carved into your time a little bit, Mr. Chairman. We've got till 5:30 for this committee. We're going to give most of the time to you. We've got a representative from the Department of Management and Budget here as well to talk to us about the status of certain things, but we look forward to hearing from you. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chairman Atkins, members of the Commerce Committee. It is a pleasure to testify before you and on behalf of the Minnesota Racing Commission. The information set forth in this presentation will provide an overview of the Commission's activities, organizational structure, and disbursements. The pari-mutuel racing industry in Minnesota represents an important segment of the state's economy, not only as reflected by the 2012 operations of Canterbury Park and Running Ace Harness Park, but also through the economic agribusiness activity represented by the breeding, training, and related support activities for the racing equine throughout the state. Canterbury Park conducted 62 days of live racing for thoroughbreds and quarter horses this past summer from May 18th through September 3rd, and Running Aces Harness Park conducted 51 days of live racing for standardbred horses from June 6th through September 3rd. During the 1999 legislative session, the legislature passed Chapter 206, allowing licensed racetracks to operate a kart club in addition to live racing and simulcasting. It was clearly stated intent of the legislation was to increase purses, which immediately happened. Operations of Canterbury Park for the calendar year of 2011 added $3,033,837 to their purse, while Running Ace Harness Park Kart Club added $2,909,031 to their purses. Historically, there has been an overall decline in pari-mutuel handle and a decline in the Minnesota bred racehorses. Monies from Kart Club playing activities and pari-mutuel betting directly after purses that are available for horse owners who participate in races at both racetracks. The decline in revenue reduces the opportunity for a return on investment of purchasing, raising, and training horses for competition at these tracks. This decline directly affects the spending for wages, capital improvement, professional services, and supplies and materials that occur primarily in Greater Minnesota, resulting in a lowering of the economic impact of horse racing, which is contrary to one of the main objectives of the establishment of pari-mutuel horse racing in the state. Regardless of the current situation, the Racing Commission and staff will continue to regulate regulatory duties and responsibilities along with its goal of assuring the continued integrity for its form of gambling, safety and welfare of both the equine and human participants, and resulting economic opportunities for those desiring to participate in this sport. Our mission statement is very clear. The Minnesota Racing Commission was established to regulate horse racing and kart club operations at a Class A tracks in Minnesota. The legislative charge is to ensure the integrity of racing and kart club operations and promote the breeding of racehorses to stimulate agricultural and rural agribusiness. Before you, you have a copy of our organizational chart, and that chart has been in effect for the greater part of our existence, with the exception of the additions of the kart club staffing and growth has been very consistent. As you see, we have an open position. Currently, we have an open position for our executive director. We have a national search underway, and as provided in the statute, it is the intent of the MRC, working closely with MMB in this search, to make recommendations to the governor in the very near future to fulfill this position in 2013. The 23 years, or better than 20 years, our former executive director was appointed in 1989 and retired October 27, 2012. And we had an experience, at least I had an experience as the chair during the shutdown, to learn that there were very few persons in the state of Minnesota that clearly understood just how our appropriations worked, and was pleased that our executive director did an affidavit to the court to explain that appropriation, and I'll share with you what those appropriations are. The MRC expenditures originate from three different funds. Only the smallest of these funds is subject to a biennium appropriation, and that is for the purpose of setting a spending cap on the amount of existing funds. That money is in a special revenue account dedicated to the MRC use. The legislatively appropriate monies, special revenue accounts, are primarily used for ministerial and administrative functions of the MRC, including issuance of new licenses, conducting background investigations relative to license issuance, preparation of reports. This revenue comes from license fees imposed on the racetracks and individuals working for or at the racetracks. This money amounts to approximately 28.5% of the MRC expenditures. Second fund from which the MRC spends money is the Breeders' Fund. Pursuant to a statutory formula, the MRC imposes a tax on the parimutuel receipts of Class B license under Minnesota Statute 240.15, Subpart 1, and deposits the money into the Breeders' Funds established under Minnesota Statute 240.18. This fund remains in the custody of the MRC, which pays the money out accordingly to the statutory and rule formula and MRC decision-making. The third source, the MRC spending, comes from assessments from the MRC makes upon licensees, that being the tracks, the Class A licensees. This money is used for conducting and governing live racing and kart play. The authority of these assessments come from Minnesota Statute 240.30, Subpart 9, and 240.155, Subpart 1. These funds are deposited into an account designated as Racing Reimbursement Account, and upon deposit, this money is immediately appropriated to the MRC by operation of Statutes Minnesota 240.155, Subpart 1. Needless to say, there was a lot of confusion about how we were funded, and last year in the legislature, we had an effort to deal with the next shutdown that hopefully we don't experience one, which would prohibit this from happening again. Why? We have people coming from all over the world to do world-class racing, and when racing was shut down as a result of our shutdown, it did cause a tremendous hardship upon our industry. We are self-funded through our licensees, and I think the important thing is that when we start thinking about changes to the appropriations or the structure, please keep in mind that it's our licensees that actually fund this sport and the payment of all of the persons that have the pleasure of working at the MRC. Our statutory powers are vast and very, very complete. We regulate horse racing in Minnesota to ensure that it is conducted in the public interest. We issue license as provided in this chapter. We enforce all the laws, rules governing horse racing. We collect and distribute all taxes provided in this chapter, and I'm speaking specifically of 240.03. We conduct necessary investigations and inquiries and compel the submission of information, documents, and records deemed necessary to carry out our duties. We employ and supervise personnel under this chapter and determine the number of racing days to be held in the state and at each licensed racetrack. And we take all necessary steps to ensure the integrity of racing in Minnesota and impose fees on the racing and kart playing industries sufficient to cover our operating costs of the commission with the approval of the legislature, according to section 16A.1283. I've also included in this presentation a copy of or illustration, it's pretty accurate, which covers the revenue estimates for spending authority, and that you can see between 2008 and 2011 what those those revenue estimates were. Our 2012 numbers will be completed by 15th of February. At that time, is the intention of the MRC to get each member of this committee and the governor and the legislature a copy of our annual report. We have some very ambitious goals at the MRC. Just to share several of them with you, we use best practice and regulatory policies. We are compliant on a national regulatory guideline basis. And by that, I mean we are very compliant with Racing Commission's International Model Rules Group, which governs model rules for all racetracks in North America. And we are very responsive to all inquiries and complaints that the commission receives. We have what many will say, and I would caution you, is not realistic and goal, and that is zero injuries to horses, jockeys, and others. But we take it seriously because in our sport, life and death is only a moment or a second away. We have a nationally recognized veterinarian program. We are fortunate to have one of the premier veterinarians in North America as our state vet. Our state vet is also the head of the National Regulatory Committee of Vets, reporting to the RMTC, which is a national veterinarian group that they work on the medication issues that we're faced with, which are becoming more and more complicated. We were the first in the country to establish thresholds for corticosteroids, thanks to our state vet and the consensus building process that was put in place by our former executive director with the HBPA, which is the Horsemen's Protective Benevolence Association, the Minnesota Thoroughbred Association, and all the other parties, including the Quarter Horse Association, Standardbred Association here in Minnesota. Once we had that consensus building process put in place, we were able to actually go to rule, to put in rule what those thresholds would be. And this year we had a 98.2% compliance with all of our medication rules. That's unheard of in North America. And that is not to say that we did not have some difference of opinion with those who violated the rules and were found not to be in compliance. We did prosecute those out to the fullest. And we have a great story to tell nationally. We have had a lot of controversy nationally about horse racing, the equine industry, but Minnesota is at the forefront, premier in the nation of conducting its racing at the highest level and highest quality of racing. And then, of course, we are proud to reemphasize that we have two world-class facilities. No matter where you go in the United States of America, you will not find any lesser or better facility than Canterbury Park. They have the finest turf club course in North America in the Midwest, and they are doing some very innovative things, which I'll give you a brief overview of. With respect to harness racing, we have a very fine facility in Columbus, Minnesota. Its track is very well kept, and I have no knowledge of any harness track that had a better track record than Running Aces did with respect to the safety of its animals and the quality of racing that they were conducting over the 10 years since they've been in business.
See, Mr. Overton, can I interrupt you briefly?
Yeah.
This is probably a good spot at which to stop and save it as a jumping-off point. We
sure.
have both policy and finance purview with respect to the Racing Commission. And I think this was a good introduction for committee members, but my guess is that they probably want to be on their way, and we adjourn the committee here in about 60 seconds. So I very much appreciate you taking the time for us this afternoon, and we'll look forward to visiting with you and your staff when we come back to the budget issues and other policy-related matters. So thanks again for coming.
Thank you very much, Chairman Atkins. I look forward to coming back, and also I will be able to make the harness meeting down in Cannon Falls now. So thank you very much.
Very good.
Thank
you. And members, thanks again. Appreciate your attendance this afternoon. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Have a good week. We're adjourned.